This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Do you say and do things when drinking that you regret the next day? Is alcohol a problem for you or someone you really care about? Over the next hour, we'll find out how people just like you and me found sobriety in AA through sharing their experience, strength and hope. Welcome to AA Live, brought to you by Alcoholics Anonymous.
Kia ora, e te whanau. Welcome to the AA Live radio show. This is a show and podcast that explores the ideas behind a way of recovery through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Sue. I'm back. And thank you all for tuning in this evening on the 28th of April. Hey, tonight we've got the theme of the program is common ground. And I sort of thought about that before we walked into the studio, because it's a special program tonight, because we're exploring the relationship of recovery between the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and that one of the Al-Anon program. Often we look at recovery as a solitary path, a journey taken by the individual seeking sobriety. But for those of us living in the wake of alcoholism, we know that the family is an ecosystem. Where one part shifts, the whole system can undergo a rupture or a series of cracks and fissures. And so in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, the focus is on the first step of admitting powerlessness over alcohol. And also in the rooms of Al-Anon, there is a parallel, I should watch out for that word, mirror admitting powerlessness over the alcoholic. While these two programs have different primary purposes, they do share a singular powerful foundation in the 12 steps. And for this unique twinning, if you like, joining myself in the studio this evening, I'd like to extend a great welcome to our guest, Craig and Katrina. Hi.
Hi, Sue. Thanks for having us.
Yes. This is a first off for the AA Live program, having Al-Anon in with AA. So it's a great privilege, and it's a bit of an experiment, but let's see where we go with this. It should be really compelling. So how are you both? You've come in. I know that you're off out to your other place this afternoon or this evening.
Yeah, just busy lives, and like everybody, and it's a challenging environment out there at the moment. So we're navigating all those things that everybody else is probably navigating, and we've got grown children that have just finished school and starting university and careers and things like that. So yeah, it's just the daily. We're into the daily grind. Yeah.
Yeah, just keeping mentally well, mind, body and spirit, basically, using the tools that we have.
That's right. So you've got, how many kids do you have together?
We have four.
Four children. Well, not children, it sounds like they're young adults.
Yeah. We have, our eldest is 22, and our second son, he is turning 21 this year, and we have twins who are 18. Yeah, so all left school now, all sort of like taking their next phase of life steps. So that's an interesting journey, standing back and observing that. So,
and also for yourselves together and individually, no doubt as well.
Yeah absolutely. We might explore that a bit more, but yeah, working together as a partnership, Katrina and I, and navigating all those things that bringing up young adults as they take their steps out into the world, given their experiences, little children's with what happened with my journey, and just watching them as they navigate those challenges themselves, and what they have to face. So it's an interesting time.
We're certainly better equipped thanks to the 12-step program.
Right. And now we go, typically in our program, we go on to a daily reflection to sort of set up ourselves up. But I thought this time, to keep it sort of as a collab, if you like, and for relevancy, I've pulled out a piece from the Courage to Change publication, and that's the One Day at a Time Al-Anon edition. Is that right, Katrina?
Yep.
I've got it right there. And I've even got in brackets because I'm such a nerd, and that's published in 1992. Mm-hmm. Courage to Change. Would one of you like to read it? Or is that too much of a...
Yeah, I can read it.
Yeah. That'll be really great, yeah. Actually. That'd
so
be cool.
Just in Al-Anon, we have various little booklets of daily readings. So they've, you know, a reading for every day of the year. So, yeah, this is one of the booklets, Courage to Change, and it's of my experience around this particular area. It's something that we read at most meetings. Yeah, we hook into perhaps what someone's feeling for the day or even the daily reading itself or, yeah, and then sort of go to that particular reading that we can then break down and work on from there. So, yeah, but this is today's one.
This is today, 28th of April.
Awesome. And,
yes.
Okay. So sometimes the things we consider our greatest weaknesses prove to be our greatest strengths. They provide us with opportunities for growth that we would have never had otherwise. All my life I prayed for courage, but it was through my shyness that I learned that courage was already available to me. I was hesitant about sharing in meetings, afraid I would be ridiculed. I sat in the back and I kept my secrets to myself. Still, I heard my own story so often that I began to lose my fear. Calling upon a reverse of courage I didn't know existed, I managed to approach some members who seemed to have similar experiences. In time, I had spoken with so many people one-on-one that sharing in a group became possible, even comfortable. In my fear, if my fear had simply been removed, I might never have known that I am capable of acting on my own behalf. I didn't need enough strength to get up in front of a room full of strangers. I only needed enough to keep me taking tiny steps. I had exactly enough strength and courage to reach my goal. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, exactly that. takes me back to my first couple of meetings where all these people seemed to have managed to gain some serenity back in their lives, and they were strong and they were able to talk about all sorts of things without breaking down. And another experienced old-timer had said to me, just listen, just sit and listen.
Mm.
And one day you'll find the courage to then share your story and, you know, we can help you through that. So that's pretty much basically what happened, you know, sitting and listening, because you sort of feel like an alien and that no one really gets you or no one will ever understand your story. but the moment you walk into the rooms, you're like, geez, that's me, you know, wow. And they're talking about it openly. So instantly you create this bond with these people that they're strangers, but they're like your best friends. And they become your tribe because they get you, yeah.
And, of course, I'd imagine, well, I know it's true, that some of them would be like yourselves, you're in a relationship where other people would be maybe their daughter or son.
Yeah.
Is suffering from or has the disease of alcoholism,
yeah.
or all sorts of reasons.
Yeah,
or
there
the
are
relationships.
All sorts, yeah, definitely all sorts of relationships. I have known of, you know, some members who their mother and father are sober, but one of their parents, like so, their parents, so the member's grandparent, was an alcoholic. And of course, the child of that alcoholic is being brought up with alcoholism, and then that's then been handed down to the next generation. So it is a generational thing, and so that's a real eye opener as well. That it's that long away, but it has so much impact in people's lives.
There's traits and behaviours.
Absolutely.
Ways of reacting to things.
Yes.
Ways of dealing with stresses or good times.
Yes.
You know, it can be sort of polar opposite too.
Yeah.
Can't
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, so definitely all types of relationships. I mean, they sort of mentioned that for, you know, every alcoholic potentially affects up to 15 others, you know, impacts up to 15 other lives. It wanes out a long way.
Yeah, I'm just thinking while you're saying that, and I've just, you know, when you double think, and I'm thinking about the people in my life that have been.
Yeah,
part
well,
of
even
that as
for
well.
You know Craig and I, you think it's just us, but you know my dad was an alcoholic, and we sort of lived through once we're warriors type life, if you like. Still plenty of love, thank goodness, but, you know, divorce and all the rest of it, beatings. And and so now, like, and then I married an alcoholic. and thankfully for the program and trying to live the 12 steps on a daily, hour-by-hour basis, we have been able to make some changes. But, you know, we know that our children have definitely been affected by my behaviours through having to live with alcoholics and by
my behaviours being an alcoholic. Yeah.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, Craig, because we've known each other in the rooms, and I can say that, and that... Did you, okay, if we wind this back a bit, how do I say this? Did you know that Craig had a problem with drinking when you got together with him?
No, not initially, because we were young and we were having time of our lives. he was in a rural sector for work, which was, you know, alcohol was a big part of that. I was in banking, and we had massive fun, massive parties. And then it wasn't till sort of we had our babies. I mean, I knew he was a heavy drinker, but still didn't really think that there was an issue. And then babies come along, and it was, now I look back, our lives, well, my life was unmanageable because of alcohol. But you sort of just think that it's sort of normal and you keep fighting and keep ticking.
Well, it's not as bad as your other experiences, you
well,
know.
Well, yeah, it's interesting you say that, because it actually is in in totally different ways. The discussion that we were sort of having prior to coming on air, and Craig said, oh, you know, Katrina used to try and control me. You know, and that's a massive trait, because you're trying to control who you're connecting with. You know, do they drink, or can you go to somewhere that doesn't drink, or can we take 6 bottles of beer and hide the rest? And
yeah, and I think also, you know, that perception of you kind of alluded to it then. So in a way, is we didn't have violence in our home, so I didn't. You know, where Katrina experienced that from her father and things. So that in my brain, I used to say to myself, "Well, that's nowhere near as been. I'm not hurting anybody. I'm only hurting myself. And I've never hit you or the kids or you know.
I put money on the feed the family, do all these kind of conditional
this perception
things.
That exactly. But I think about what we were talking about before and affecting 15 people or more. You know, it was like throwing a pebble in a pond and watching the ripples, because I used to say that, you know, there used to be a discussion with Katrina and I say, look, I'm not hurting, leave me alone. I'm not hurting you. I'm not hurting the kids. The only person I'm hurting is myself with a hangover. But I was hurting all of the people around me, but not in a physical way, but certainly in an emotional way.
And so Craig, in terms of providing just a little bit of a background just for this evening on, like, I called it your recovery biography. I quite like this word now, it's just my new thing. But it's just, sort of the pattern, you know. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
My story, it's kind of like Katrina said when she first met me. I mean, I grew up in a house that wasn't full of alcohol. People did, mum and dad did have a drink and things like that. But I think, you know, being a young Kiwi guy where I was growing up, we idolised people that could drink. You know, I watched the All Blacks, and you see photos of them in the newspapers and things like that. They'd be sitting in the change room after the game with a big bottle of beer and a fag, and they were the strongest, the toughest. And, you know, I grew up in that environment. I went to work, you know, as soon as I left school, I went to work in the wool industry, which was, again, in those days, synonymous with alcohol and drinking. And pretty much the more you could drink, it was almost a badge of honor. So I first started drinking when I was a teenager. I loved what it did to me. It took away all the shyness, all the anxiety, all of the things that I, you know, struggled with in my life disappeared when I put alcohol in there. I could talk to girls, I could talk to boys, in terms of that social anxiety and things like that. So that was good, and I had a lot of fun. Katrina and I met. It was nothing to, even when I think right back to the early days, I never really drank other than to get drunk or to have that feeling of being inebriated. And I think back now, I can never understand anybody having a couple of quiet drinks and stopping. I don't even remember, as far back as I can remember in my memory, that ever was part of my psyche. When I was younger, it didn't matter because everybody was doing the same thing. And then slowly but surely, as we got older, we got married, got engaged and got married. And I think about all those big events in my life, my 21st, when I got engaged to Katrina, when we got married, when we had children. I was drunk at all of those big occasions in my life. I may not have been actually drunk while it was happening, if you like. So when the kids were being born and I was in the delivery room, I wasn't drunk. But as soon as I got out of there, I got drunk. When we got married, I got drunk the night we got married, you know. So our lives revolved around it. And
it's like a punctuation of everything.
Yeah.
Everything is kind of massively sort of,
if something good
exchange right at the end, it just comes to this final point again and again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter if it was a celebration, we would have alcohol and we would get drunk. If it was something bad or sad happened, we would have alcohol and I would get drunk. It just became the be-all and end-all of everything. And I started to, you know, now that I've been in the program and actually gone back and gone through the steps and looked at my inventory, you know, there's telltale signs right back to being a teenager of things that were showing me that I had a problem with alcohol. But I just thought that's just what everybody did. There was nothing wrong with that.
And did you voluntarily go into the rooms of AA? When did you make decision, or were you, dare I say it, were you sort of pushed or shoved?
Well, it was, again, Katrina's father, so he'd been in the rooms for 30 years when he died, and he'd turned his life around from a man that, like Katrina alluded to it before, that had done some pretty horrible things. He spent the rest of his life, and it was really hard for me to understand at the time. I don't think he was looking for forgiveness. I just think he was trying to live his life the best way that he possibly could and make his amends the way he could by now understanding the program, by the way he behaved and the way he lived his life. He never ever said to me, you should go to Alcoholics Anonymous, never once. I think he observed my behaviors and probably thought that could help, but he never ever pushed me into it. I think for me, so we tried a lot of different things, and you know, when we had four kids under five at home, Katrina was at home looking after the kids. We were on one income. We had no money, had a mortgage. We were scraping by, even borrowing money off Katrina's dad to pay the grocery bills and things like that. Our marriage was hanging by an absolute thread, and we went to see a psychologist or a psychiatrist. I can't remember what it was, but to try and help our marriage, which was basically me and my behaviours and what I was doing. I went into that room and sat there with Katrina and the psychologist, person that we'd paid all this money to, and just told lies and told everybody what they wanted to hear. Everybody cried and we all felt really good about it. I said that I was having trouble sleeping and things, so they prescribed me some sleeping tablets or whatever it was. And a day or not long after that, I took five of those tablets and drank more alcohol and, you know, got myself into trouble again. And I can remember Katrina saying, you know, with tears in her eyes, with the kids standing there, why are you doing this to us? Why are you hurting us? Why, you know? And I couldn't answer it. I wasn't doing it to her and I wasn't doing it to the kids. I just couldn't stop. I couldn't figure out a way of stopping. So in a roundabout way, I'm going to answer your question. I just didn't think there was any other hope for me. I just couldn't stop. No matter how hard I tried, I thought I could never live without alcohol or some sort of way of escaping from all the feelings that were going on inside of me.
I mean, you're so consumed by it, by alcoholism or by, you know, the powerlessness, isn't it?
It is. It is.
Yeah,
time and time again.
It's so difficult to describe, but you both have experienced it in your own different ways.
And people that aren't afflicted by the disease will never understand that. And again, I'm getting to my point of talking to a psychologist and psychiatrist who probably has more knowledge on, you know, alcoholism from a trained perspective of reading literature and everything else, but it's not an alcoholic. Didn't understand the way my brain ticks and the way I worked. So finally, I went to AA with Katrina's dad and had an experience there. I spent some time in there and it made sense. There was other people there that were the same as me that, you know, thought the way I did, behaved the way I did, you know, just like that reading was at the start, that had done things like I had done. It was like sitting in a room full of people that were telling my story, and I really related to that. But I didn't probably get, or I didn't dive deep enough into doing the steps and actually doing the work. And I spent, you know, it was 3 or 4 years sober, but then I went out drinking again. But undercover, I was trying to pretend that
Were you aware of that, Katrina?
No.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Or was he managing drinking?
What Craig's described there, and that, you know, drinking and but not hurting anyone. You know, there was plenty of hurt, and from an Al-Anon perspective, or from my perspective, you know, it was always my fault. It was me. It was the way I was acting, the way I was talking, what I was doing with the kids, why we didn't have any money, that give him an excuse to drink kind of thing. So I basically took all of the blame because he didn't really know why else he needed to drink other than I was an absolute B-I-T-C-H at the time kind of thing.
So you try to sort of, we'll get to that a bit later on the program, but the idea of solving everything, having to put the fires out or to sort of compensate.
Yeah, definitely, definitely, definitely lots of overcompensation, lots of planning, lots of putting on smiley faces 24/7 when just inside you're just, you know, your heart's ripping to bits. and, you know, with the 4-week kids and that, you know, like, I love Craig, and I've always loved Craig, and I hopefully always will love Craig. But so there was never an option for me in my head to leave at that point. You know, I just wanted to fix everything. So that was just to, you know, get down and get going and keep
now,
going.
Now we've got deeper into it. I used to think that, in my mind, if you just let me drink normally and I didn't have to hide it anywhere and I didn't have to, you know, make a plan on how I could drink so that everybody would be happy.
If you took the stresses off me for my drinking, correct, and let me drink like other people,
the problem would be solved.
We are so similar. I look at you right across from this, and I'm like, because that's exactly what happened.
Home for dinner, and the kids would be getting bathed and things like that, and Katrina would allow me to have, or, you know, we would have a couple of drinks with dinner, a glass of wine, and maybe I'd have 2 stubbies in front of Katrina. But I'd be going out to the garage to get the 2nd stubby, and I'd scull 4 of them, and I had a bottle of whiskey hidden in my boat out there, and I'd be sipping, because I'd be trying to get that hit that I needed, that feeling that I wanted to get. And Katrina caught me in the garage in the dark with a bottle in my hand, sculling out of the bottle, caught blatantly, and I stood there and said, well, it's your fault I'm doing it. If you just let me drink normally, this wouldn't have to happen. It was that's the absurdity and the insaneness
and
of it.
Often the misconception from an alcoholic is that you think that other people can't see that you're getting progressively more and more pretty, dare I say, wasted.
Yeah.
Because everyone's just still on their 3rd drink, and meanwhile, you know, garage or shed or whatever you've been in, it's, you know, you're sort of, you're coming up pretty fast.
We don't want to go down and drag up all those old me, but I can remember being Katrina saying to me, you know, at a function with a family, Craig, keep your voice down. You're 3 octaves higher than everybody else. Craig, you're drunk. You know what? You've had 3 beers. What's going on? And I'd be saying, oh, I'm not drunk at all, and I'd probably be slurring my words, and I'd been out in the garage, you know, banging them down, and you know, telling lies. But I think, absurdly, inside my own mind, I didn't think I was drunk, and I didn't think there was anything wrong with that. I was trying to justify my behaviours internally, and that's, again, what I've learnt now I've got into the program, and that's starting to understand that a bit more. you know, the insaneness of my behaviours and in what I was doing. So, I went back out again. I drank. I pretended I wasn't doing that. I was doing it everywhere that I was away from Katrina and the kids, undercover, if you like. But I was putting myself and I was putting even my kids at risk when I was doing it. My sons, when we would go away hunting and things like that, I would tell them, this is a secret between us, don't tell mum, and I'll have a few beers and I'd be drunk. And so, you know, I was really hurting people. I was making the kids cover a lie for me. There was a lot of damage I was doing.
Were lots of cracks starting to appear.
Finally I got drunk again at a Christmas, at Christmas time, about 3 years ago. They were family all went to the lake, and I was just sitting there, and there was a bottle of rum on the table, and I thought, one swig out of that won't hurt me. It'll just give me a nice wee bit of a buzz this afternoon and take the edge off while I read my book. And of course, as I'm an alcoholic, one sip's not enough. I'll just have another one. And then I'll go to, you know, have another one, and I have another one. And by the time they arrived back in the afternoon, I was trying to pretend that I was nothing wrong with me, and I was drunk as a skunk. And I ruined it for everybody at Christmas. For everybody, ended up out on way up in the hills of central Otago, and sounds airy fairy, maybe sounds crazy, but I asked whatever it is for help. I said, "This is, you know, I'm lost. I can't stop. What can I do? I'm going to lose everything. If you're bloody well there, help me, help me." Didn't think too much more of it. 3 days later, I was at an AA meeting in Oamaru, of all places, because we were camping in Omarama. I went to an AA meeting in Oamaru, and I haven't had a drink since. So, but I think,
and just for everyone listening, how long ago was that? How long was
that? That's three and a half years ago.
Yeah, amazing.
But I think the big thing for me, Sue, that this time was diving into the program and really committing myself to it and saying,
you've got to wrap yourself around
you
it,
do.
Right? And you've got to invest in it.
Yeah.
That's my experience.
Going to a meeting wasn't enough. I had to do the steps. I had to get a sponsor, and I had to live it every day of my life. And we can go on to that a little bit more. Then Katrina got involved in Al-Anon, and then all of a sudden things started to become clear about how we'd been resenting each other and how we were behaving, both of us. I could only work on myself, but man, what a difference that's made to our lives, not just around alcohol, but just around our whole thinking and way of behaving and living in the universe has been just completely changed for the better.
Yeah, that sort of level of honesty is when it arrives, it's just like, yeah, this is never thought you could go to that part, even if you've been in a long-term relationship, which you have been, for the sounds of it. You are in a long-term relationship. But there's all those wonderful levels that come again, you know, when you have that sort of deep connection.
Yeah,
but I can appreciate the codependency that comes up with alcohol, with any types of misuse of something, right?
And, you know, I resented Katrina so much, but I couldn't leave either. You know, I loved her and I loved the kids. But it was like a chicken and egg. It was just going round and round and round and round in circles. And we needed to break that. We needed to understand what was causing that and why. And then understanding it's only one part of it. Then it's modifying modifying my behavior. So that doesn't continue. That was getting into the steps and working the program every day. Yeah.
Be committed. Yeah. And coming back to you, Katrina. So, so we now know a little bit more about Craig. Mm-hmm. And with your arrival in Al-Anon, even right at the beginning, how did you know about that? I should let you tell your own story.
Yeah, sure. So my dad was alcoholic, as we've talked about, and then married Craig, and sort of the same traits kept coming through. There was no violence with Craig, but there was the same traits, and I was living life like my mother lived, like she totally resented my dad and I totally resented Craig. She was tipping bottles of gin down the sink and I would be tipping bottles of stuff. We always laugh about this in the Al-Anon rooms because, you know, someone will go, oh, I threw out the Panadol so I'd have a better headache, you know. But that's how we thought that we were managing this thing, you know, hiding alcohol, or, you know. The Christmas 3.5 years ago, it was the first time we'd sort of had Christmas with my sister and her sort of extended family in a fair few years. We've lost mum and dad and that now, so it's just basically my sister and I. It was exciting. We were going to their holiday home, their new holiday home, and thing, you know, it was all sort of too good to be true, really. So we went, and like Craig said, we went boating. He stayed at home, and yeah, we got back, and I just wanted to crawl. I wanted to take off, you know. We were staying out in a caravan because it was a large number of us. And I said, oh, I feel sick. Oh, I have to go and lie down in my bed, you know, like. So I went out there, and my sister came out and she said, tea's ready. And I said, oh, I don't feel very good. I'll skip tea for now. And she said, okay. She didn't say anything. She just took off. And then...
So it was your way of just dealing with it, escape.
And that's what I've done all of my life.
Yeah.
I take myself back to school days. You know, I was a loner. Because I was different. There was something about our family that was different to everybody else. Never felt good enough, always embarrassed about what other people thought. So I took myself away. And then, of course, it was still at that point, Craig's like, why are you, none of you talking to me? You're treating me like shit. And, you know, it was all of our fault still. And I was like, I've put up with this for 50 years. I'm not putting up with alcoholics anymore, and I'm sick of it, and, you know, it's time we left, and blah, blah, blah. And I didn't want to be living my life like this for the rest of my days. And so I was kind of thinking, oh, what's going to happen now? So then he went back hunting, and I actually drove back to Dunedin for New Year's. I had one daughter with me. We were in bed like 10 o'clock and I was just sobbing my guts out thinking, where am I going to move to? What am I going to do? You know, I've got to get out of this. Craig and I went for a bike ride and tried to have this remedial talk. I don't know if you can remember. And I was saying, well, you probably kind of need help. And he's like, well, what are you going to do? You know, you're the problem. You're half the problem. And I was like, oh, okay. So that was okay. So we went home and, nothing changed too much. I don't think he did drink. I don't know. I was sort of beyond worrying about that. But I was like, actually, no, I've got to go. It's time for me to pick up the children and get out of this. I can't. I was powerless over alcohol or alcoholism. Step one. So I rung... it's not something you can kind of talk to your best friend about, you know, like, thankfully I had a friend who has been through both programs. She was brought up with an alcoholic father and then an alcoholic herself, so she's been in both programs. And I thought I'll ring her because she will hopefully understand and give me the ticket to say, yes, you need to get out. So I rang her and I said, I need to meet you for coffee and I need to do it now. So met her and she said, I said, I'm leaving. And she said, no, you're not. She said, you're not. She said, you two absolutely love each other. You've got a beautiful family and you are not leaving. But what you are going to do for me is go to Al-Anon and you're going for 3 months minimum. And this was in about January, I think. And she said to me, you go, I don't want to hear any more about this until April, and we'll sit down again like this in April and see how you're going. So I was like, okay, because as I've suggested, you know, I do love Craig and we do have a beautiful family. You know, we've been gifted with these four beautiful children and he's definitely my soulmate. So, you know, it was a lot to sort of try and walk away from, but I didn't have anything else to... no other tools.
And when that guiding advice is giving you a really great suggestion,
yes,
a firm suggestion, but also a duration, like it's got a time length on it.
Yes, yeah.
So that feels kind of achievable.
Yeah,
absolutely. Instead of like, just go along to a meeting and test it.
Yeah.
It's like, go along to some meetings
yes.
for X amount of time.
Yes, yeah. Just a side note, we do encourage any new members to come for a minimum of 6 visits because it takes a while to sort of get the program and get the people, yeah. Our eldest daughter, who was 18 at the time, she said, I think I need to go too. And she said, so I'll come with you. And I said, oh, that will be amazing, because it was pretty daunting.
Which made me really, really resentful, just quietly from the background now, in hindsight. I was thinking, this is ridiculous.
So yes.
They're ganging up on me.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I looked up the alanon.org.nz, I think it is, website. I just Googled Al-Anon, and there's this mammoth website that has all of this stuff and clips of people in the same sort of trauma as where I was. And I was thinking, yeah, I could probably do this, you know. And it has a every list of meetings in New Zealand. So wherever you are in New Zealand, you can go to that website and tap into a meeting. There's online meetings. And then if you want to explore further, there's online meetings all around the world, 7 days, 24/7. So I rocked up with our daughter to this meeting, and we got to the door and it was locked. And I was like, okay. And then a lady came out, it was in a church hall, and a lady came out and said, oh, can I help you? And we said, oh, we're here for a meeting. And she said, oh, would that be Al-Anon? And I was like, oof. She can't know that I'm coming here for Al-Anon, you know. And I went, yes. And she said, oh, well, the guy, he comes every Friday, but he hasn't turned up today. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, I'd plucked up all this courage. Anyway, we left, and I went and did a little bit more exploring on anything Al-Anon online. And there was another meeting that was a Friday, and then there was another meeting on the Sunday night at a different venue. So we went there, my daughter and I, and again, nobody kind of turned up to this hall. And I could see a woman in a car in the rear vision mirror. She'd been sitting there for a while, and I was like, oh, I hope she's going to come and open the door, or, you know. So then she went to drive off. It sort of got to about, the meeting was supposed to be 7 till 8, got to about 7:05, and then I seen her car start up, so I quickly jumped out and I went to her and I said, excuse me, are you here for a meeting? And she said, yes. And I said, an Al-Anon meeting? And she said, yes. And I said, oh, I said, I'm a first timer. And I said, this is the second time I've turned up, you know. And she said, that's okay, no problem. Let's go to Dada Cafe and we'll have a coffee. So, of course, I was just in need of something at this point, because most of me was wanting to leave, but my friend had said, no, you don't, you have to do this program. So, yeah, so we went and had a coffee, and the first thing that this lady said was the 3 C's, which is, yeah, didn't cause it, can't change it, can't cure it. And I was like, bonfire. She just, I can't manage this thing, you know. And she said, but you can change yourself. Mm-hmm. And I said, but there's nothing wrong with me. I'm fine. She said, no, there's lots wrong with you. She said, due to living with or being brought up with an alcoholic and now living with an alcoholic, she said, you are really damaged. And I was like, okay, whatever. You know.
Pretty confronting.
Yeah, it was.
Especially the word damaged. You don't want to hear that word.
No.
You know, you want to hear sort of more kind of soothing sort of ideas. Yeah.
She said, I'll tell you my story. And I said, okay, because I was like, well, she still doesn't get me. You know, she thinks, oh, it's me and there's nothing wrong with me. I'm perfectly normal. And she said her story and then how much work she's done on herself to heal all these things and change the way she lives and change the way she works in her relationships and tapping into a higher power, you know, a God of your understanding. And I was like, wow. You know, this is my story. She's pretty much lived similar life to what I have. But she has all these tools in her kit, you know, and all these you know, living one day at a time, and all these acronyms, just all these different things that, you know, when you're feeling this, if you just tap into that, or, you know. And I was like, wow, I want more of this, you know. So so then she said, well, come next Sunday and I'll come again. And she said, I'll ring a couple of the other old timers and try and get them along. So I think Al-Anon in Dunedin at that time had been a little bit disjointed. You know, there was not many people, and the ones that were turning up were sort of just turning up in the hope of new people, and that wasn't happening. And so, yeah, so it sort of sparked a new beginning for Al-Anon a little bit.
Fantastic.
And encouraged people to come. And, yeah, the knowledge of those older people who had been in the program, who had worked the steps, was just absolutely so comforting and helpful. Yeah. So,
and it's similar to like the AA steps of recovery. From what I understand, there's, I mean, I'm researching a little bit.
Yes.
But there's still the 12 steps.
Absolutely.
And that they almost are identical.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
You still run through that, and you've obviously got a sponsor?
No, we don't, because Dunedin is
not
so...
Sorry, I shouldn't assume that. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
not
no, sadly not. Dunedin's still quite small, and then the ones sort of that have had experience have sort of moved on away from Dunedin. So we've been sort of all trying to explore getting an individual sponsor. We have done some group work on steps, and some of our meetings are often run around a step. So it gives us a little bit of insight on a group situation. And in some moments of that, you know, it's confronting. But it is an opportunity to sort of get things out of you as well. So, yeah, so still sponsor and is work in progress, along with doing the steps on an individual basis. Yeah, absolutely.
But I just also quite curious to ask you, so you go through the, you just go to start going through the stepping, and, you know, you've been invested in this program, and you've got Craig who's sitting right beside you right now. But then you start, isn't it, for me, for my sobriety, I started going on this whole other sort of level. You know,
yeah.
the drink goes down. Mm. Took me a while to get into sustained recovery. But when I got to the AA program this time, I sort of stuck with it and just, you know, really, really driving it with a higher power, of course. It's not just all about me. But so this give up drinking, is it similar to an Al-Anon? So Craig was, instead of all the energy going into him, mm-hmm. and the sort of the, his hiding or consuming or his behaviours, mm-hmm. do you? What's the process in your own self that
yeah,
starts
absolutely.
To change?
Yep. So, so similar thing around, not necessarily. Well, firstly, I went to Al-Anon to fix Craig. You know, I was going to Al-Anon to learn to get how I can get him to stop drinking. And the first
just thing, like we go to AA to try and learn how to drink like a normal well, you like it. Yeah, sorry for interrupting,
yeah.
But yeah.
So, yeah, I quickly learned that it was nothing, the program is nothing about the alcoholic in anybody's life. It's about you as a person and what you can do with these tools and the 12 steps and a higher power to make changes in your life that are going to give you serenity and make you, you know, enhance your life and relationships. So, so we went, and I must admit, the first sort of, you know, those first six meetings that we tell people that you sort of need to come for, at that point I was still going, there's no way I can know all of this and feel the way those people are feeling and live with some normality in my life. It's going to take years, you know. But I kept going back because I had this 3-month sort of picture, and then slowly each visit by visit and listening and applying the tools and trying to, you know, work around the steps. So for me it was my voice tone and the way I talk to people. So I still lose it occasionally. It used to be like just
that, so practical.
That's just how I used to.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, pick that up, or, you know, like, now I can say, oh, do you mind? Would you be able to pick that up for me, please? You know, like, it seems ridiculous, but it's the little things that were actually big things. So when I get frustrated, I start banging doors, slamming cupboards, kicking things. Now I can in most cases, walk away and then come back in.
That idea of pausing,
yes,
deciding,
yes,
you know,
yeah,
delay,
yeah,
that kind of thing. Yeah,
yeah. I had a lot of anxiety over being at places and being on time, and I still have a little, I still like being on time.
Craig calls we had that Katrina on the way time. Here.
Punctuality, nothing wrong with that.
But,
great trait.
That everything has to be perfect.
Yes.
You can maybe elaborate on that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, it is. So as a compensation for what and who you're living with and what you think people might live, you've got to work doubly hard at everything to have everything else perfect. So it was always, you know, and it takes me right back to my dear mum. You know, if someone was said, oh, I'll come over on Sunday and see you, which was very rare that someone came to our house anyway, because she was clearly obviously so ashamed of what they might see or hear, or if Dad got drunk, or, you know, so people really come to our home. But if they did, she would need notice, and she'd spend a week polishing, you know, and it's an overcompensation of to try and distract people for what they might really see, you know. So, yeah, so it was always doing all these things perfect, yeah. Or like, what's another example, Craig? You've probably got loads of them.
Well, no, that's the one that jumps out. But
because
just,
at the same time, you're transforming, I'm assuming, as well. Because you're sort of in the AA program and, you know, those changes are starting to happen.
And it's just amazing for us to go through this journey together and watch it sort of happen, because at the start I was the same. I went to AA. I didn't know what I wanted. I just wanted relief from whatever it was that I was afflicted with. And I didn't know, and I never in my wildest dreams thought I could ever be happy or live my life without alcohol in it. But I went to AA thinking that they might teach me how to drink properly or solve all these problems, or maybe even just distract some of the people around me from being so angry with me for the way I was doing. Didn't take long to figure out I was an alcoholic, and I had, you know, the disease of alcoholism, and that the really only cure for me was total abstinence. I could never drink again. And then for us to go through this journey, because it didn't just automatically, once we started going after a few weeks, everything all turned to roses again. Like there was many, and still now we butt heads on things. But it's been amazing over that journey to watch us both change, and you know, the things we talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous, the promises, that watching that come to fruition. That, you know, when I first heard that, I was like, oh yeah, poo hoo, you know, what, it's just a reading, it doesn't really mean anything. But it's happening, and it's happening to us within our lives, and we're watching it unfold, and the impact that's having on our children and people around us in our workplaces and our greater families and things. So
yeah, like even our kids now will say, you know, that they talk about the change in us. Like every card we get, it goes, we are so grateful for you working your program and trying to change. Our lives are so much better, you know. So that in itself is phenomenal, you know, that because they're still young. And so hopefully, you know, my hope is that, yes, they've been damaged by alcoholism, but through us both working hard on a daily basis.
And demonstrating.
And trying to demonstrate. That, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, you know, it'll keep getting better.
Mm. It's a remarkable story, and, well, it's a reality. It's not necessarily a story. I always hate that sort of word. But
because a story almost seems like it has a finish, and it's not finished.
No,
like
it's warming up,
it just goes on and on, and it gets better, but it has it. I mean, we have our struggles like every couple does. But I think we've got way better tools and
I know now, like if I, you know, if you start rambling off, or if something, like if Craig leaves a mess on the bench or the kids or something, you know, like I used to get really angry, and that's when I start firing things around, whereas now I can kind of try and breathe a bit through it and, you know, just accept what is. I'm not perfect in any means of the words, but it's just little.
And it's because it's the end of April now, or we are in April, and so you know, sometimes they have step four, you know, they sort of align the steps with that. And in the rooms at the moment, it's sort of, it's not like I'm reliving my step four, but it's, yeah, looking at those character traits, you know, what were my behaviours of not just who I am, you know, and sure, that for me, it's sort of how was my alcoholic behaviours coming through to that. But then it's, you really get into nitty gritty and that the ability to program to look back at that and go, okay, so what parts can I start to work on or drop, you know, and adjust? Yes. And sometimes really gradually and slowly, which is probably more sustained in a way.
Too, now, like if we have a bit of a goal or whatever, you can usually one of us will say, oh, look, I'm out of line, or, you know, I didn't mean it that way. Like we can sort of apply another conversation to it to try and explain ourselves better, or because sometimes it's communication.
For me personally, it was all about winning. I always had to win the argument or the fight or the, you know what I mean? Like, and it didn't have to be just with my wife, with anybody. And, you know.
So competitive.
Yeah.
All these kind of that trap, but to a point that was not that beneficial.
And what did I achieve out of it? You know, nothing. It's, you know, let it go. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. And, you know, the fruits of our relationship now are just blossoming more and more and more. We've got closer and closer, way closer now, through probably, you know, dare I say it, the trauma and the whatever we've been through, and then working this program has brought us closer together than probably we ever were, even way back in the early days, or when our kids were born and things like that. That's how I feel about it.
Yeah,
and it's just getting stronger and stronger and stronger. You know, not to say, just like, we just be perfectly honest, we still have our rows, we still piss each other off. I mean, that's human nature. But man, it's just the rewards are just so much. There's so much there. And it keeps jumping back to me. Katrina talked about her dad, and he used to say, long before even I got involved in AA, the 12-step program, because we all used to think there's this mysterious thing, you go to his meeting each week and everything else. And he used to say, oh God, I wish we could take the 12-step program in AA into schools and teach it in schools to all the kids in school. Not because they're all going to become alcoholics and junkies and all those sorts of things, just because it makes your life a better place if you can apply these principles in your life. And I used to think that was he's talking a load of rubbish. But man, now having experienced that, and then the two of us experiencing it, one from me as being an alcoholic and Katrina is not an alcoholic, but kind of working that 12 steps through Al-Anon, how much more enriched and fulfilled our lives have become because of that.
Yeah. And I guess tonight, we've come up to time already. I can't believe we haven't even played any music. We're just, I've been so captivated. Yeah. But I guess we could have another session as well, because there's also the Alateens, you know, the idea of there is programs for younger people that are affected by close ones who are a problem with alcoholism.
Yeah, absolutely. Probably the last thing I'd point out at the end is I'm by no means an expert at AA. I don't profess to know it all or understand it all. I just know that for what I'm doing and working the program for me has worked for me personally. Mm. And, you know, if I've said something that's not quite right or anything else, I apologise in advance. But, you know.
Oh, we've got like disclaimers all over this program.
Yeah,
don't worry about it.
I just want to get that out there. You know, it works for us the way you know, we understand and the way we do it. Yeah.
No, I really, really appreciate you both coming in tonight. It's been fascinating. And I have to confess, and not because of this program, but I have, I too have come across people now in Al-Anon program, and I went to a meeting, and I've been reading Lois Remembers because I just wanted to understand, you know, how was it all set up, and what was it, a relationship? What is it like, you know, living with an alcoholic? So it was. Not confronting, but it was eye-opening and educational.
Yes.
But I do need to close the program, so here we go. Thank you so much. Really,
thank
really
you
appreciate
us.
It.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Yes, thank you very much.
Yeah, cool. So, Alcoholics, there we go. Alcoholics Anonymous is a program based on 12 steps. For those who aren't sure what that means, the 12 steps outline a path to spiritual progress through a series of actions designed to draw out a complete mental, emotional, and spiritual shift in perception. So we really do believe that the 12 steps can be a crucial element of long-term recovery. But thank you again for spending time with me tonight. A compelling show. And for all of our listeners, if you want to drink, that is your business. But if you want to stop, we can help. And here are two ways, I do speak quite quickly, of to contact Alcoholics Anonymous. And you can call us on 0800 22 96757. And of course, the website is aa.org.nz. It's really worth looking at. But I'm going to add in here, and I'm really pushing this as well, if you want to make contact with Al-Anon, there's two ways of getting in touch with them as well. And the phone numbers are 0508 425 266. And the Al-Anon website that Katrina was just talking about is alanon.org.nz. And I have to say, it is a really good website. And you can buy literature off it. Uh-huh. But also, there's really good readings. There's little links, and it's got all the meetings and all the online meetings. It's so jump into that if you think that if you, you're questioning about your experience with alcoholism. Thank you for the show tonight. Good night.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.